This is Fresh Air. A lot of people dismiss the American Nazi Party, the Ku Klux Klan, and the skinheads as the lunatic fringe. Reporter James Ridgway started taking seriously the racist far right in 1984 when he was reporting on the presidential campaign for the Village Voice. He was traveling in the Midwest during the height of the farm crisis. He found people were desperate and many were turning to extremist hate groups for answers. Ridgway continued to research the history and culture of the racist far right. He's written a new book and produced a film, both called Blood in the Face. He told me why he thought these racist groups caught on in the Midwest.
The people who were making sense, the people who sort of brought everybody, you know, up, got them going, were these people from the far right who were, you know, arguing that you had to fight the foreclosures, that there was really a conspiracy behind them, that it was an international Jewish, you know, banking conspiracy. They had hotlines. There were secret organizations, kind of mysterious organizations, with names like the Posse Comitatus. And what these groups did was they offered an analysis. They offered a theory of what was happening. Now, I don't, you know, share that theory, but for a time, it was a captivating thing. And it was totally ignored by everybody. And so this far right, it seemed to me, had a real impact on that part of the country. And of course, you know, it's a real wide swath because it's not just the Middle West. It was also in the far west and in the south. And that's what got me interested in it. And I really came to think and do think that all these ideas that influence mainstream American politics oftentimes, you know, percolate from, you know, the further shores.
David Duke of the Ku Klux Klan was elected to the Louisiana State Legislature in 1990. Do you see Duke as representing the cutting edge of a new style in racist leadership?
Well, I think, you know, Duke may be gone, you know, relatively soon from the political scene. I don't know. But I do think so, yeah. I think that Duke's ability to get as many votes as he did, I mean, it was like 600,000, you know, 40% of the white vote, or 40% of the vote overall and two-thirds of the white vote and a higher percentage of young white men is really impressive in terms of politics. And I think that those who argue that David Duke is just a populist and this was just some sort of a populist campaign, I really don't have it correct. I mean, I think this was not a populist campaign. I mean, Duke made a great point of running on what he thinks, and I think everybody would have to admit if they looked at it, was a conservative Republican. And he liked to talk about Reagan. I mean, Reagan wouldn't share his views, but a conservative Republican platform. And it was with a racial spear point. I mean, it was cloaked in racialism.
He was actually thrown out of the Klan for selling Klan mailing lists for, what, $35,000 or something. Did they ever try to use that against him in his campaign? I mean, you know, who discredited by the Ku Klux Klan. I don't know what the outcome
would
have been of that.
No, that was sort of like one of those intramural fights, I guess,
right,
in different Klan groups. And of course, David Duke is, you know, the Klan is historically anti-Catholic, but David Duke takes great pride in his reform efforts in the Klan, and his Klan in Louisiana was largely Catholic. So he says.
Oh, there's something else about David Duke that other people might know. I certainly didn't. I learned it in your book, was that he wrote a couple of books under pseudonyms. He wrote a manual called How to Get a Man under a female pseudonym that included, like, sex tips on getting your man. He wrote a street fighting manual for blacks under a pseudonym. This kind of sounds bizarre.
Well, it's all part of the sort of like guerrilla warfare. It's kind of this covert, this enthralling CIA daring do, you know, the stuff where you pretend to be one thing when you're actually something else. And
did he have an agenda for writing these books? I mean, do you think it was a psychological agenda or a political one?
I don't know. You know, it might have been a psychological one. It's really hard to know. I mean, it's sort of like, it's loopy, you know? I don't know where it came from.
Right. I really am very interested in the fact that he had plastic surgery. Do you think it was to make him look even more Aryan or something?
Well, I think it was probably to make him look good on television.
Right.
And also he said, I think he said he'd had it was either a broken nose or a jaw or something, and he just wanted to get it fixed, and he didn't see why people should be so upset about it. He was just like everybody else, which is probably partly true.
When you were interviewing people from the extremist groups, what kind of approach did you take? And when you're hanging around with them, too, I mean, did you try not to let them know that you were passing judgment on them and to just be very neutral?
Well, no, I mean, I have a particular way of doing things, and I'm extremely interested in people. And I'm interested in why they think the way they think, and where I'm interested in their histories and where they came from, and why they operate the way they do. And I wasn't interested in passing any judgment on the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, I'm not a member of the Ku Klux Klan. I don't believe in the ideas and theories and so on of the Klan or the far right. But I am very interested in finding out where these ideas come from and, like, why they think the way they think. And I think that you have to sort of get people going and give them a chance to explain, you know, and themselves, and do it over and over again, take a long time, as long as it takes. And, you know, it gets pretty boring after a while. But, I mean, you sort of then, after you do this for several hours, you get a kind of a feel for where all this is coming from.
I want to play a clip from your movie, and this is actually an archival clip with George Lincoln Rockwell, the founder of the American Nazi Party. This appears to be a news interview with him, and he's fielding questions about why he believes what he believes.
Do you consider yourself the second Führer?
I don't even use the word Führer. I'm not a German. I'm an American, as you're a Canadian. I consider myself, in terms of Bolshevism, I would be the Lenin to Marx. And in terms of Christianity, I'm the St. Paul to Hitler's Christ. In other words, I am the spreader, the world spreader of a doctrine which Hitler originated, and it was crucified, dead and buried, and it is now rising.
Are you a Superman, Commander?
I'm not a Superman, no. There's probably people here could whip me. I think that all I am is the offspring of millions of years of evolution which has produced white Christian civilization. I am one example of it, not a Superman. I think that compared to an Aborigine in Africa who eats his grandmother, and they're still eating people over there, I think I am, and so are you. We're all Supermen compared to those cruds.
Commander, how do you feel about the allegations that the American Nazi Party has strong homosexual tendencies?
I will say this. In my organization, I have men who were homosexuals. They were sucked into that filth, just like drunkards or dope fiends. And I have been able to rescue them. And I'm not a bit ashamed of that. I'll stand shoulder to shoulder with any one of them any day. The only thing I will not tolerate is a homosexual who is a homosexual.
This is one of your enemies?
That's one of the biggest enemies. I'd rather gas queers than anybody else.
Well, that's pretty chilling.
You know, the thing about Rockwell that's really interesting is that, you know, he never was very much of anything in the far right. I mean, he didn't really cut much of a path. But in death, I mean, as time has gone on, he's become really this kind of like hero or this who people talk about far more than I think they ever did when he was alive.
If you're just joining us, my guest is James Ridgway, and he writes a regular feature in the Village Voice called The Moving Target. He's the author of the new book and co-filmmaker of a new movie called Blood in the Face, which is about the extremist racist groups in America. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Journalist James Ridgway is my guest, and he's written a new book that's the companion to a new movie called Blood in the Face, about the extremist racist right-wing groups in America. Let's try to get deeper into the thinking of these racist groups. In hating Jews and in hating blacks and hating Asians in America and gays, are there different things that they blame each group for? Is there like a different reason to hate blacks than there is to hate Jews when you get deep into the thinking of the people who belong to these groups?
Well, currently, I mean, the major preoccupation, I think, on the far right is Jews. And blacks have sort of subsided. But what happens is the people whom if there's violence, I mean, the people who bear the violence are black people, and poor black people. They always bear the violence. But the Jews provide more they give you more to work on in terms of your theories, I guess. I mean, you can theoretically say that the Jews have been, the myths about the Jew as a demon, you know, have been going on for so many centuries that, you know, you can work on that a little harder. So it's basically about the Jewish conspiracy and about money, international banking, which does reverberate, you know, to a lot of people, especially in hard times.
When you look at the extremist racist groups now, what do you see as the greatest threat? Which groups or which individuals or is it just the mass of it that worries you the most?
I think the thing that's, if you want to call it a threat, are the ideas. I don't think that there's any number of these people that are going to rise up and, you know, go and kill people. I mean, there are real conspiracies of attempt to, like, there are conspiracies of people who were members of the Aryan Nations who attempted to bomb a gay nightclub in Seattle. Those are real criminal acts. There are things like that. There are those kinds of conspiracies. But, I mean, the real thing here are the ideas and what happens to the ideas and the relationship of the mainstream politics to some of these fringe groups. And, I mean, the David Duke thing is a very clear and, you know, obvious and probably sort of woebegone example of all this. But it's sort of the beast within everyone. I mean, none of us are going to care to admit to this. I mean, we just don't care to admit to it, that we're going to do things like this. And the way it works is that you have a Klan cross-burning, and everybody from television is now welcome, comes in. It's not just 200 people in a back lot somewhere in the South, you know, in the misty woods at night. All the television cameras are there. You cross burns and march around, do stuff, and you show it on television. People say, well, I'm not that. That's certainly, I wouldn't do that. But you can attack the Klan, but the ideas will linger in your mind.
Is that an argument for not paying attention to them, for not giving them a lot of press?
No, I think the way to deal with the far right, I think the way that, you know, a liberal person or American society should deal with all politics is to pay attention to all of it, all the time. And I think that the way in which the far right works out in American culture is that you have to learn about it. You can't pretend it's a paranoid fringe. If you want to keep pretending, like most American historians, you know, don't pretend but argue, that this is a paranoid fringe and has no meaning in American society, you'll do so at your peril. I guarantee, in my opinion, you'll do so at your peril, because something will happen that will come from this so-called paranoid fringe, and then you can reinvent it and you can say it's a paranoid fringe. But I don't think it is a paranoid fringe. I think it's a substantial, important, central part of American culture. And that's probably what differentiates someone like myself from most of the other people who write and discuss this subject.
James Ridgway is a columnist for The Village Voice. His new book on the rise of white supremacist groups is called Blood in the Face. He produced a new documentary of the same name. It's showing at the Film Forum in New York. This is Fresh Air.